Four, three, two, one. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in. I'm Mike Lafferty, host of the Vamp Podcast, and also Colorado Salsa Dance Champion in the Husky Caucasian Division. And today we're having a comics roundtable where we're going to do a couple things. We're going to talk about the recent Avengers movie, and David Oakham is here to talk about his really fun Supers RPG for kids called Save the Day, which is on Kickstarter right now. Hey, David, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
And I believe you are from the Great White North, judging by your accent.
Yes, from Canada.
Excellent, excellent. I was in Vancouver just last summer.
Oh, it's great. It's almost Canada.
Actually, Canada.
That's like Canada cool. It's the cool part of Canada. So yeah, I haven't been there for a long time, but it's a great city.
They had a nice poutine, so that's all I can say. And speaking of exotic locations, Charles Rice is joining us from Florida.
Yes, from the wilds of Plant City.
Plant City?
Yeah.
Is that like Gorilla City, but with big asparagus men?
It's like Tampa with fields and strawberries.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
So isn't that part of Florida that's really Alabama?
No, it's Florida.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, for those of you who don't know, Chuck used to be associated with RPG Objects, Vigilance Press, and most recently is working at, I'm blank on the name. Chuck, help me out.
Mayfair Games.
Mayfair Games, who are a huge publisher, do things like Settlers of Catan and all kinds of great games you've probably heard of. And Chuck is writing his own game right now, After Zombies, a zombie RPG, which will be out sometime soon?
Writing is 100%, art is 90%. So we are lumbering closer to the apocalypse.
Sweet, sweet. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that as it draws closer. Also with us is Mr. Aid Smith. How you doing, Aid?
Not too bad, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining. And we have, Chris, you have the strange names on Google Hangout, so I always get confused for a second. But Mr. Chris McLaughlin.
Yes. Don't ever use my secret identity on air.
No worries. Okay. Right. For those of you not in the know, Chris McLaughlin is a RPG writer who's largely associated these days with Green Ronin and was one of the primary writers on Emerald City Sourcebook, which has been nominated for an N Origin Award.
Yes. Huh? Yes. Along with D&D 5th Edition Monster Manual, so it's an honor to be nominated, I guess.
I called my bookie for the over-under on your guys' chances, and it's an honor to be nominated, and I'm very happy because that's a great
it
book.
Is. Yeah, it truly is. I mean, that was a good 6 or 7 months of my life, and it released to a resounding silence. And I was so proud of the work we did on that. And I was so worried that nobody had noticed all the good work we did. And then we got the Innie win, and now the Origins Award nomination. So it's just so delightful to me that people found that book after all. They were awfully quiet about it, but God, so wonderful, so satisfying to know that people actually found it and enjoyed it.
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, it was delayed a lot. Number two, the M&M audience, I think, is large, but kind of quiet. I don't think there's a surge of enthusiasm there was back in first ed and second ed days for new books. I think people still want to find them. It's just not quite the clamoring there used to be online.
I think there's something to that. I mean, they hardly have the energy to tell me they hate noir anymore. So yeah, they're definitely relaxing more these days.
Well, they're getting older. You know, this happens. Oh, and this podcast, we're giving away, not to toot my own horn at all, because Chris is a better writer than I am, but I also contributed to Emerald City, and I've got some contributor copies, and we'll be giving away one to whoever leaves the most amusing comment on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this on YouTube, go over to mikelaft.podbean.com and leave a funny comment, and after a week or two, whoever left the most amusing one will contact you and ship you a book. So that's our big giveaway. And last but not least is our host for the evening, Mr. Walt Rebilliard. How you doing, Walt?
I could have been a Green Ronin, but I look better in red.
And for those of you who don't know, Walt runs Hazard Studios, and they are the publishers of the outrageously fun Supers with an exclamation mark and all caps RPG. And if you're not playing it, you really should. What's wrong with you? So, Walt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
So, Age of Ultron. Everyone's seen it except for Aid, who's not going to see it until it gets on Netflix, and Dave, who doesn't mind if we spoil it for him. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm fine. My daughter spoiled it for me in the car, so.
All right, well, you know, I don't get to talk much on these, so I'll just open up by saying I really liked it. I was surprised they found a way to do Vision in a movie that was entertaining and relatively, you know, true to his origin. I could quibble with a few lines in the script here and there, but overall I was pleasantly surprised that they managed to make a second Avengers movie that was, you know, not a disaster. You know, given the, you know, usual history of superhero movies. It did seem to have a lot in common with the first movie, in that the big climax features the Avengers fighting, you know, a huge, you know, relentless wave of, you know, mindless minions. So I'm wondering if they're going to do that in the third movie as well. So anyway, that's my brief thoughts. Chuck, what do you think about it?
I thought it was not quite as good as the first movie, but I felt like they absolutely nailed the Vision, and as all right-thinking people know, Vision is objectively the greatest Avenger, so, you know, that's obviously key, and made the movie very great, and they did a good job, I thought, with continuing Black Widow's characterization and with Scarlet Witch, so I really liked it. The weak part of the movie, which I think all the Marvel movies kind of have this in common, I thought was the bad guy.
What do you mean? You mean Ultron Spader?
I thought Ultron was the weakest part of the movie, yes. And I would have said that, like, the antagonist of the first Avengers movie was completely generic. They were basically non-shape-shifting Skrulls. Sounds awesome.
You know, with all due respect, if you were watching those guys instead of Tom Hiddleston's Loki, I think you missed the best part of the first movie.
Well, okay, sure, but he was not. I would not say he was the primary antagonist. He does a big reason the middle part of the first Avengers movie is so amazing is Tom Hiddleston. But yeah, but in this one. You know, Ultron kind of shows up. He's murderous from the day he's born, basically. Which is, you know, to give them credit, that's exactly how he is in the comics. Baby Ultron tries to kill Hank Pym. So,
what did you think of the meme that's popping up everywhere, where it's got a picture of Ultron and it says, "Spent 2 minutes on the internet and decided the human race had to die."
There's probably something to that.
Go to some of the same forums, I think.
I like, you know, you can see the seeds being planted for Civil War here, too. There was a lot that I really liked about it. I almost felt it was too busy in some ways, and I think that hurt it a little, but, you know, it was still probably one of the five best Marvel movies.
I'm a little worried about Civil War. I just think that's a bad event to try to do, you know, as a film.
I think that's really going to be great.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't you hate the way it ended?
Well, I hated that they killed Cap.
Well, yeah. I hated that, too. I hope they're not going that way with it.
But one of the things, again, like if you look at the Marvel movies having weak antagonists, if they make Robert Downey Jr. the antagonist of Civil War, then that should be awesome.
Yeah, I wonder if that problem goes back to Marvel in general, because I remember when I was reading Civil War, I really liked it up until the last issue or two. And I was like, you know, this kind of makes sense, because Marvel has sort of got terrible villains these days, and the more interesting characters are the heroes, so you have them fight each other, so you get, you know, antagonists who actually have something, you know.
Yeah. Anytime you read a Mark Millar book, he there are some characters that, like, you listen to his take on it. Like, he thinks that, like, Reed Richards is, like, the biggest He-Man action hero in the Marvel Universe. He has actually said this. And you're like, what Reed Richards are we talking about again? Which one? He, you know, his Cap was, you know, telling Stark that he was a fascist and, you know, the people were holding him back and he wanted to fight and he was all violent and, I don't know, it's like he has very odd takes on various Marvel characters. So
Well, that's one reason I'm worried about Civil War is, I mean, there was a fan theory at the time that it was about mind control, because the way Cap and Tony Stark were acting was way out of character. But
turns out it was just shitty writing.
Yes.
I thought they said that the Skrulls were manipulating things from behind the scenes.
Well, they were manipulating things, but they weren't manipulating with mind control. They were, you know, just... They were placing
Yeah, they were just prodding, so, yeah. prodding so things
the,
along.
So the dart landed on Skrull influence instead of LMD during this crossover, I guess?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Hey, Chris, so what'd you think of the movie?
Well, I have to admit, I came in with very, 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 very low expectations because I think the bane of any of these type big franchise movies is this unexplainable need to cram in 27 new characters per sequel. And the more people that I saw were appearing in this movie, my hopes just sank further and further and further and further and further. And honestly, I was expecting some decent action interspersed with just ample piles of mess. But I have to give all the credit in the world to the people behind that film, because I still think it could have lost all the new characters and still been a damn fine movie.
It would have been better.
Yeah, but, you know, given the roughly 27 new characters that got introduced, I didn't really feel cheated on all of on any of them. You know, it seemed to be more than just fan service. It seemed to be just more than we have to get this guy that was in two issues of Excalibur 25 years ago in the back of the Xavier School just to make somebody on the internet happy. You know, I was really, really impressed. I have to really take my hat off and marvel at the ability to juggle that many characters and, at least on first viewing, do right by them.
Yeah.
And just the more that I considered that movie, the more I think I'm truly in awe with what Marvel Studios are doing, because they get the big picture right, and they get the details right. Like noticing that the band that's playing in Cap's flashback are the Roy Thomas Players,
right?
You know, and I'm still in the warm glow of Steve Gerber getting a shout out in Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, Marvel Studios is doing so many things right. I mean, they're doing things better than the actual comics these days. I mean, they really have turned these into an event I can look forward to and enjoy, and I was really, 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 really pleased with it. And so hats off to Marvel. It took me 24 hours to come up with something negative about it. I mean, that's the requirement of a book report. You have to come up with at least one criticism. And here you go. This is the best I can do. Okay, they go to Hawkeye's house, no pizza dog cameo. That's my gripe. No pizza dog cameo. And honestly, that's the biggest stone I can hurl at it.
That would have been pretty honest. Sorry, that would have been pretty awesome. What'd you guys think about the whole burgeoning romance between Hulk and Scarlet Witch?
Sorry, Hulk and Black Widow?
Why did I say Scarlet? What's wrong with me? Sorry, yes, Chuck, you are correct.
I liked it. I thought a lot of people, as they often do, have said that, you know, one analogy I saw from a reporter who didn't like it said it was Beauty and the Beast, but I thought it was Beast and the Beast, and I liked that about it. If anything, he was the weaker partner. He was like, let's just run away, and she was like, no, we have to fight, and so therefore I have to push you off a cliff so you can become the Hulk.
And, you know, that scene resonated with me, because, you know, the number of women that have shoved me off a cliff, you know, that meant a lot to me.
Well, and it was a callback to when they first met, because she says, I need the other guy,
mm-hmm.
which is what he called the Hulk the first time they met.
Well, you see, right there to the details.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something else that I don't know if this was intentional or not, but you guys may be, at least us married folks will know how, you know, to show the quality of a diamond, they'll put a piece of black velvet on so that you can see all the facets and flaws of the inferior stones. And I don't know if it was true when you guys saw it, but they ran that god awful trailer for Batman versus Superman right before my showing of Avengers. That was the dark cloth that showed just what a beautiful gem Age of Ultron was.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I mean, seriously, I'm starting to think Zack Snyder has stock in Disney. There's no other way to explain that trailer existing and being what it is.
And to all of our longtime listeners, make sure to pick up DC Adventures from RPG Now, featuring work by Jonathan
and absolutely nothing to do with Zack Snyder or anything he's ever done for or to the DC Universe. So yes, a highly recommended purchase.
So no desaturated color in the Green Ronin DC book?
None of that. No. We don't do the Harley Quinn that says her vagina's like a clown car. We miss all of their atrocities of the last 5 years.
Wow.
I think you made a good point about the movies being better than the comics in many ways. I was debating picking up a copy of Guardians of the Galaxy this Wednesday, and then I saw that they're leading up to killing Rocket Raccoon. And I was like, I just couldn't give a shit less.
Because it's so edgy and original when they kill someone. No one ever thought of that.
You know, it's a sequel was cool, though, so we'll be back once it gets reshifted. So.
Of course. He'll come back in Convergence. We'll get
it's,
Ultimate
it's
Rocket
in Secret Wars.
Secret Wars is the big reset for Marvel. Yeah.
Convergence. Yeah, and Zim Rocket's going to die in that, so it'll be reset. So don't worry.
Mike, I refuse to figure out which one is which. Honestly, I don't. I really. That's how little I care.
As far as Chuck's concerned, it's all Secret Convergence. So.
It's all nonsense and bullshit, is what it is.
I'll give you another little detail that shows you how much better Age of Ultron is doing than the actual comics. There's that little quick comic scene where, I can never think of her name, Kobe Smulders' character, Maria Hill, yes, yeah. When she's explaining what the Scarlet Witch's powers are, and she goes through this hyper Doctor Who, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow type double talk. But and the thing is, even that joking description of her movie powers makes way more sense than her actual powers in the comics.
Right.
Because my wife and I, we have like a little debriefing. She hits me with all the little comic nerdy questions afterwards. And she's like, and we were talking about that. And she said, well, what does the Scarlet Witch do in the comics? And I told her, and she just paused and said, you're kidding.
What? She messes with probabilities. Who doesn't understand how that would work?
Well, it's but you're like, wait, probability is a thing now? You can create little zones of improbability?
Right.
You know,
and that allows you to crack Ultron's, adamantium armor, because apparently, you only need to roll a 1,000 on percentile dice, right?
So exactly. It's a crit. That's all it is. It's a reroll. Come on.
Yeah.
And wow, aren't the Avengers lucky that Fox has the rights to adamantium, or they might have really been screwed in this movie?
it was a shame we had non-Quicksilver have to die. But
about the point that's been made about Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman, I got to say, Joss Whedon had a hilarious quote. Since he's announced that he's not going to do, another Marvel movie for a while, a reporter said to him, so would you think about doing a DC movie? And he said, yeah, I've thought about it. But then I think I would go to them and I would say, I have all these jokes. And they'd say, oh, no, we don't do those. Or, we don't do that.
That's a good point, actually. Just in terms of the DC movies compared to the Marvel movies recently, they're filming Suicide Squad in Toronto, about an hour away from me right now. And so, like, people that live in Toronto are just sending these pictures of the set, and it's a train wreck, like, just wreck everywhere. Literally, it's in a train station, so it's a wreck. And yeah. I'm wondering, like, do I even want to see this movie now?
Right.
Based on what I'm seeing so far, and I'm always so excited about superhero movies, and I just the Zack Snyder movies have given me so much. So much darkness. I don't know if I can handle it. I don't know if I'm there yet.
Well, I understand they have Emmanuel Lewis playing the Riddler in the Suicide Squad movie. That's 100% true. I didn't make that up right now.
Well, yeah, it just needs something. The joke thing is it's a good point though. I think it's a joke and it's kind of funny, but it's just this gravitas that's thrown into the movies that. It just seems like, do you know what your source is? Do you know what your source material is?
Right.
Like, have you read a comic?
Right.
You
know? It reminds
me
that...
Did you see what Gal Simone wrote about, tweeted about the Suicide Squad lineup?
No.
She basically tweeted and said she's never seen such a collection of grey and beige characters standing next to each other. Which is true. You know, they're all, there's nothing to distinguish each character from the other one. I mean, I said to the guy who bought my comics from, you would have thought they would have CGI'd Croc like they did with the Hulk to at least make Croc stand out from everybody else. But they didn't. It's just a guy in slightly brown. It's terrible.
Right.
Mm. I think once they add in Jazzy Jeff, it's kind of hard to go.
Yeah, I've seen them.
That'd be cool.
Somebody put the comic book character heads on, Photoshop them onto the actors' bodies, and that looks a lot better. That looks like a better movie. Just people with masks on their faces would be awesome, you know?
Wow. Anyway. Well, you've been kind of quiet, so what would you think about Avengers? And Suicide Squad, if you want to weigh in.
Suicide Squad, I'm not really a DC guy. I mean, if somebody hands me a trade and says, check this out, that's usually when I get my dose, and it usually requires therapy or massive amounts of liquor, which I can't drink. So, yeah, there's that. But as far as the movie goes, since we're heavily comparing what Marvel Studios is doing with what Warner Brothers is doing with the other side of the big two, the thing I liked about the movie most was that their whole thing in that end battle was, much like it was in the first one, it's keep people safe. Minimize the damage. Let's. No matter what, if we get out of this, it's not. That's if we can make it through, that's great. But if there's a chance we can save one more life, even if we don't make it out, you know, which was demonstrated by Hawkeye at the end. That was fantastic. And the thing for me, the really great character in Age of Ultron were both. Banner and Hawkeye. Banner because he's almost like what you were saying, Chris. He's like that piece of black velvet that shows all the facets of Black Widow, because he sees if you look at Banner, he is the monster incarnate, but she sees in him that his natural side, his Banner side, can be just as good as the Hyde side is, and then they kind of play off each other, and I thought that was great. But as far as Hawkeye goes, Hawkeye to me in this movie seemed the better soldier than Captain America, because he's you know, and he says it in that great scene at the end with Scarlet Witch. He's like, look, I'm just a dude with a bow fighting robots. I mean, how much more crazy does this get? But he's like, but I got to go out there, and I can't worry that you're going to get hurt, because there are people who can't defend themselves out there that we need to help. And if you step out this door, you're helping, you know? And I just thought that was great, because it was, he had the most to lose out of all of them, you know, because he's got a family. He's got a new, new child on the way. You know, he's got all this stuff that he keeps so secret because he wants it so protected. And I just thought at the end, when he's sitting there and he looks up one more time and he sees that one last civilian that needs to get rescued, you know, and he just puts his head down and then gets up and runs. And you're just like, you know, that was a great scene. And I think it says a lot about what the Marvel Universe is trying to do with these movies. And that they're saying that you guys can have your dark and gritty and foul and no jokes over here and have every palette be black and gray, and that's cool. We're going to make colorful movies that make our heroes look like heroes. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I like
I adapted the Siskel and Ebert scale right after I saw it, and my original assessment was that Age of Ultron was one middle finger pointed at Zack Snyder. I've reassessed that. I now think the movie is two middle fingers pointed at Zack Snyder and Mass Murderer of Steel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it sounds like the opposite of Man of Steel, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's Kevin Smith said when he was working on his aborted Superman script that the producer said to him, you know, that he thought Sean Penn should play Superman because he looks like he would just rip your heart out and show it to you. And Kevin Smith was like, wait, Superman? Really?
That's more of a Black Adam guy.
So, yeah.
Can I throw in some random trivia?
Yes.
I was reading a Film Facts interview with Ilya Salkind, who produced the original Christopher Reeve movies. And he was reminiscing about the making of the first Christopher Reeve movie and was talking about all the people that they had to let read the part due to studio pressure. And there were names on there like Sylvester Stallone. But the one that really got me was the studio would not let up until they let Neil Diamond come in and read for the part.
Cool. Wow. Interesting.
Well, yeah. That's shocking.
I don't know what to say about that.
That was the problem with the interview. He still had like 10 more years of his career to talk about, and you can't follow up Neil Diamond as Superman.
Right.
You know, I'll say I enjoy the jazz singer unironically. but he's not a dude I would pick.
Which apparently someone on this podcast finds hilarious that you enjoy that album unironically.
I'm talking about the movie. I don't actually own any of Neil Diamond's many quality albums. I'm sure. I just it's not a bad. It's got John Gilgan. It's got Lawrence. Sorry, it's got Laurence Olivier in it. For Christ's sakes, it's not a bad movie. And Lucille Ball's daughter. I mean, but yeah, he's not who you think of when you think of Superman. So. And then there was an awkward silence on the BAMF podcast.
We have nowhere to go after Neil Diamond is Superman.
The other news today is that it seems Cap 3 is going to be a stealth Avengers movie based on the cast announcement.
Yeah, it looks like everybody who was in this last movie is going to be in that movie.
Right, except Hulk is the only omission, really. And Quicksilver, but we all know why that is.
Well, I did until just now.
Okay, right.
He's going to come back as a hologram and give really bad advice. Well, hey, David, Oakham.
Hey.
Let's talk about your Kickstarter.
Certainly. Well, it's quite a segue, but I did a picture of Neil Diamond in 2009. I did a drawing a day, and I went to a store. And they were playing nothing but Neil Diamond the whole time. It was a life-changing event.
So now you got to do him as Superman. You have to do him as Superman now.
That's my job tonight. I will do that.
Yes.
Definitely post that. You can share that. And you can put it as a cover.
This podcast. Can you do him as Poison? I even have him singing Crackling Rose.
Wow.
I can do that. I could probably pull that. I just like that Superman image, though. But
hey, have him singing Coming to America.
Yeah, so the Save the Day.
As Superman at karaoke.
As the ship crashes. That would be good.
All right, hey, Hey, let's just to reintroduce to anybody who might have forgotten what we said 20 minutes ago, Dave is running a Kickstarter called Save the Day. It's a superhero RPG for kids. It's on Kickstarter right now, 8 more days, and you have kicked all kinds of ass, David. You're almost $4,500 out of a goal of about $1,500. Yeah. So congratulations.
It happened so quickly, too. That was great. I did a Kickstarter about a year ago for a game called Dark Vast Dungeons, which I'm still putting stuff out for and really enjoying. And this kind of came out of that. The actual idea for Save the Day came from this crazy idea I had to turn old school D&D into a superhero game. Because everybody was complaining about 4th edition being a superhero game. And I said, well, why don't I make a superhero game using 1st edition D&D, just to kind of see what could happen. We tried that out, and we played that a couple of times. And then I did this Kickstarter, and then I thought, well, why don't I graft it onto this system and see how this system takes to it. And it was so much faster, and it was so much quicker. You can make a character in 10 minutes. So I thought, this is it. If you're going to make a superhero character quickly, this is the one I want. So did a lot of playtesting, did a lot of working with some kids in my regular group. So I've had gamers for 35 years that are playing this game, that are enjoying it, and they've got kids that are learning the game quickly and teaching it to other kids. So it's been a real fun experience to work on this and develop this.
Now, I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. So the bones of Save the Day is actually old school D&D.
Well, originally, the bones of Save the Day were was the basics, statistics. Roll up your character, first level you know, rookie superheroes, and then that eventually became grafted onto what I created with Darkfast Dungeons, which was my Kickstarter from last year. That was more of a board game, tabletop, almost like a Descent kind of, you know, beer and pretzels kind of dungeon crawl game. But I thought, you know what, I could probably really use this system and tell a superhero story. And that's what the challenge was, and that's what I ended up doing. And it got kind of out of hand and became the next Kickstarter.
So Darkfast Dungeons was a board game?
Yeah, Darkfast Dungeons is a print-and-play board game. Okay. So that means you could print as much as you like. You could use the rules and have traditional miniatures, or you could... A lot of people just bought it for the miniatures and paper miniatures, and that's what kind of I started to get known for at the time. And so Darkfast Dungeons kind of became the two things. It became this paper miniature extravaganza, and then it became this game as well. And, you know, so it just made sense that Save the Day would become that. Would come out of that. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been great.
Oh, well, cool. Oh, yeah, if anyone wants to check that out, Wargame Vault is where I just Googled and found it. $10 right now on wargamevault.com. So there you go. Well, cool.
Yeah.
You look like you've been really successful. Well, looks like you funded completely on the first day. For Save the Day.
For Save the Day, yeah. And that was great. I think there's people that were kind of waiting for it to come out. And so they'd been kind of, you know, waiting for the day to come for the Kickstarter to launch, and that kind of hit really fast. You know, like all Kickstarters, you get that middle zone where you're kind of like, what's happening, you know, what's going on? And then I started adding more stretch goals and trying to make them interesting, and I've got this one stretch goal coming up, which is kind of, I call it, it's Sanction. So Sanction, Hall of Sanction. So it's kind of based on a certain train station in Cincinnati, and it's going to be a paper model you can build, but it's also going to have a superhero team to go with it, and supervillains. So it's my coming up in the stretch goals. So it's kind of funny how sometimes you get these pictures in your head and you just have to suddenly make them real, you know, for people.
Well, cool. And I guess I should note at this time, Chuck and Chris, you guys aren't the only two on the podcast who've been nominated for Ennies, because Dave was also nominated for an Ennie for Katana Schoolgirls versus Zombie Furies, Snowball Wars.
Nice.
Well, I've never been nominated for a title that good. I'll say that much.
Yeah. That was exciting. Katana, and actually, it's basically the same system I'm using for Save the Day. Katana Schoolgirls was this anime thing I wanted to do with Big Eye Small Mouth back in the day, and it kind of evolved into this zombie fighting war game that I've got out. And that was very awesomely nominated for an Ennie, and then I was nominated for an Ennie for my Spot of Bother Highland Guard set of Queen's Guards. Which was another paper model set that I put together. I was up against, I think I lost against Pathfinder, so it was like I was nominated.
Yeah, I think that's how the Ennies usually go. There's about 5 companies who win, and for everyone else, it's an honor to be nominated. But it's hard to compete against the Green Ronins and the Paizos and the Wizards of the Coast.
We won one award last year. we're not the one clogging up the podium.
It was kind of exciting. Yeah, it was kind of exciting lying on the floor of my kitchen reading the tweets to see what was going on, what was happening next. So one of these days I'll have to get down there.
I'm sorry, Dave, we were losing you there. Could you say it again, please?
Oh, that's okay. I talk too fast sometimes. I was lying on my kitchen floor checking my phone, checking the tweets to see who was winning and how who's winning is the announcements. So as people were live tweeting the Ennies, I was following along, trying to figure out who won. But that was kind of that was exciting. That was kind of fun. I know that they're broadcasting it now, casting it now. So I'm gonna make sure I tune in this time.
Nice.
I was kind of surprised to hear that because I understand it's pretty noisy usually at the ceremony.
Yeah,
I imagine you've been there. Is it pretty noisy there?
Well, I not that I've noticed, but the last few years they've been holding it in the old train station, and it's this marvelously huge Art Deco building with a bar right next to it. So it just, it really, I mean, it's like something I would build in my dreams. So, I mean, even I'm not up for anything. I just love being in that big old building where I can go get snockered if things start to run slow. So if there's been a noise problem, I've never noticed it.
Okay. Nice. That's Union Station you're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah, the old Union Station, yeah.
I'm guessing the bar next door is Ike and Jonesy's, if I'm not mistaken.
All my memories are blurry. I guess maybe I've spent too much time at that bar.
I used to live in Annapolis back before witness protection, so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I turned on the Cornfield Mafia, so I'm living in Colorado now. But all right, so we're, let's see, so we have about 8 days left to get into the Save the Day Kickstarter, and you mentioned this last one you've unlocked, the Hall of Sanction, is based on a train station in Cincinnati?
A certain train station that has been used in cartoons as a hall of something.
The Hall of Justice was modeled on a train station from Cincinnati, wasn't it?
Wow. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know that until I went to university and studied fine art, and my professor mentioned that to me. So that was quite exciting to discover that it was a real building and I could actually go and visit it if I wanted. So that was very cool.
From Cincinnati, though. But yeah, that's that is pretty cool. All right. And so that will, that's one of the paper, you know, you're doing a whole series of paper maps and paper miniatures that go along with Kickstarter, and that's going to be one of them?
Yeah, it's going to be one of the, what's one of the stretch goals, so that'll be included when we reach that. But paper miniatures is something that I've been doing a lot more of, and I did a live, sort of real play example on YouTube. It's a little long. But I wanted to show how quickly you can make a character, and then I wanted to show how you play. So we played for about an hour, having this waterfront fight with this Octopus Man. The character just made up on the spot, and we just started playing. And it got kind of fun, kind of out of control. I tried to use paper models for all the terrain, so from various companies. But I'll also be producing my own. For this as well. So there'll be maps, and then there'll be 2D maps, and then also is going to be an opportunity to print them off as 3D models as well for people who want to build them a bit more up. So,
you know, if folks are interested in seeing their videos, you have an actual play, they're on your Kickstarter page. And also, you've got, this was pretty cool, I thought. Mm-hmm. You've got a test drive for free on RPG Now they can download, and you've got a photo comic you did of a sample of gameplay.
Yeah, I did a demo fight with a couple friends, and it was a lot of fun. It was just one hero against one villain, and it was actually a bit of a battle, so it turned out. And I tried to break it down into teaching the system as it's being played, and so we took some photos with our phones and just played it out. It was a lot of fun.
I gotta say, it's cool hearing about someone who's inducting kids into RPGs, because I don't think I've gamed with anybody under the age of 35 in the last like 5 or 6 years, so that's a good thing.
I was at a convention in this was in March, and I ran to a game of Snowball Wars for some group of kids, and I ran a game of Darkfast Dungeons for some kids and an adult, and it was a lot of fun to see how they took to the games and ideas they had and things that they were being very creative with. And, I'm also teaching some kids how to play White Box Sword and Wizardry, I've got to go. One kid who wants to basically write his own adventures and publish his own adventures for it. And I'm like, yes, you have to do this now. So we're trying to sit down and figure out how he can do this and how he can make his own adventures, hand-drawn maps and drawings of monsters. His drawings of goblins are great, so he's got to do it. He's got to do this now. So it's another project I'm working on. Too busy.
Oh, cool. Do you have any tips for introducing kids to RPGs? You know, stuff you've learned from the playtests?
I think the basic idea is that this is a fun thing. And it's not playing like with action figures. It's not, there's certain rules to play with. So you have to wait your turn. But you can be as creative as possible. And I really think that encouraging creativity is the thing that gets the best results. Once you encourage the creativity, I find that they really respond well, and they do a great job. And sometimes they'll suggest things that are beyond the laws of physics. That's what a superhero game is great for. But when it comes to a regular, why not make a roll? See if you can do it. And you know, they love it. Win or lose, they have a great time. So you know, I find that that's just encouraging their creativity and their problem solving is the best thing, I think. Yeah.
Oh, well, cool. All right. Well, hey, so get on Kickstarter and do a search for Save the Day and give it a look. There's a lot of great stuff there to check out. And well, hey, here we are with 10 minutes left in the podcast. Anyone else want to talk about Age of Avengers or comics or anything else going on?
Well, you know, maybe the best thing I could say about Age of Ultron is it has me thinking words I never thought I would believe or say unironically, but I'm looking forward to Ant-Man.
Yes. Hell yeah, Ant-Man.
You know, yeah, I mean, I am of the age of my enduring image of that character is when they did the superhero party sketch on classic Saturday Night Live, and Garrett Morris is running around in the costume, and he's talking to the Hulk and the Flash, and he's like, and they don't recognize him, like, my name is Ant-Man, what do you do? I shrink down to the size of an ant. And Dan Aykroyd's Flash is like, and then you get, like, really strong or something, like, no, I have the strength of a normal man. And they're like, "Ooh, stay away from this guy. Ooh, don't make this guy mad." But there I'll be, ready to plunk down my $50 to get the IMAX 3D of Ant-Man. Wow. What a world.
Are they going to be doing anything in the comics to ramp up Ant-Man?
Well, you know, that's going to be really interesting because you know, I can kind of see how Ant-Man would play well with modern special effects as a visual medium and all that. But I'm just wondering, geez, how do you translate that to a comic? I mean, this is a character that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby bailed on fairly quickly. And, you know, you got to think, if Jack Kirby can't make this guy visually interesting long enough to sustain a title, wow, what else is somebody going? What else is somebody else going to bring to the table?
Well, then they had the same issue with the Atom. I mean, have they ever been able to maintain a long running monthly with that character?
That's very true. But for some reason, the Atom, just the classic Atom tales, just seem like so much of their time because they really do show that Julie Schwartz. Let me pause to give you a random bit of physics type thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, it's. They almost seem like two different characters.
The Atom was more successful as a solo strip than Ant-Man. A lot of Ant-Man success, like Chris said earlier, Jack Kirby did a lot of cool, crazy stuff with Ant-Man, but very quickly they transitioned to Giant Man and decided that was a cooler idea.
Now, I don't know if you guys are watching any
bigger
podcasts.
Bigger ideas.
Go ahead. Who was talking?
Oh, watching the Flash? Are you mentioning or?
No one. Apparently.
I was gonna say Arrow, but I mean they're in the same continuity. They've been doing Brandon Routh as the Atom, and apparently he's been pretty popular. And although maybe you can confirm or deny this, I heard they were kind of doing him as an Iron Man-like character on the TV show.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got this mechanized suit, and yeah. They you know, they have him flying around right now and you know, basically experimenting. It's almost like it's almost like they're using his character as another way to bring on new viewers so that and offset some of the darkness of the show, because he brings a very lighthearted touch to it. You know, and there's even a bit where Oliver says, "Hey, you know, you're not trained for this. You know, you're very smart. You created this great suit, and it's great that you want to put it on and, you know, run around like an armored Avenger and go fight guys, but you're not trained for this." So what they do is they rig up this, like, head rig for Oliver, and what he does in the physical world translates through the net and then gets translated into the suit, and he uses almost like VR to help Brandon Routh's character fight this bad guy. And it's almost like he's remote controlling the suit with Brandon in it. So I mean, it was, you know, they're using that character to bring a little lightheartedness. And I think that Even though he was introduced in Arrow, he's a much better fit into the Flash cast because you have that science based narrative going on there. But also the characters are a little more lighthearted than they are on Arrow, that seems to be getting progressively darker as the series goes on.
Well, cool. So is it accurate to describe him as kind of a DC take on Iron Man in that TV show, or is that not correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even down to, like, the miniaturized reactor-style power source that he has to go to Central City and to Star Labs to get help with. I mean, and it's almost like they're using that character as a bridge between the two shows. It's kind of a neat way to do it.
I'm glad to see Brandon Routh still getting work. I was afraid maybe he was done after Superman Returns all those years ago.
Well, he's making some inroads in this particular series because he's very fun as that character, as Ray Palmer. It's just a quirky genius, almost Tony Stark-like without the alcoholism.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out then. There's so much superhero TV I haven't checked out lately, like Daredevil on Netflix is apparently supposed to be really good. You guys watch that?
I've only started watching it. It's been quite enjoyable. I was quite excited about the Stick episode. I yelled Stick about 5 times when I saw him, apparently. And
apparently, it was quite actually.
I don't know. I woke up later covered in Cheetos. But it was that excited me to no end, and it was nice to see. Nice to see the character done how I felt he was in the comic, and it was exciting. It was like 1980 all over again.
Oh, cool, cool. Hey, Ade, you've been kind of quiet this podcast. Have you checked out either one of these TV shows we're talking about?
I do not watch Arrow. I have watched the first 6 or 7 Daredevils, I think.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
It's been pretty cool. It's not been too bad. Yeah, it's not been too bad. I was talking to the guy who I buy my comics from, and I said to him that it seemed to fit quite nicely with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but he seemed to think that it didn't fit well because of the outlandish stuff that's happening in the movies didn't really reflect on the TV series. But the TV series in itself seems to be quite gritty again. Probably Daredevil seemed to be a bit too happy to start stabbing people at any drop of a hat, which seemed to worry me slightly. But the funny thing I found was, as most of the movies and TV stuff is, the characters and like Karen Page and all this stuff are from the 70s and 80s again, rather than the newer characters that have been introduced in the last 10 or 15 years. It all seems to be that kind of golden era that when they go back to the storylines, like Days of Futures Past and this kind of stuff, it's always from 25 years ago or whatever. So it's quite unusual. Maybe no good comics have been made in the last 30 years. That's for you to decide. So.
Whatever, man. Civil War.
Well, yes. It's a funny thing. You mentioned Civil War again, and you were saying about Age of Ultron laying the ground for Civil War. The key parts of Civil War were Speedball and his group blowing up the place in the suburbs. Black Goliath being killed and the clone of Thor. None of those three things are in the cinematic universe, so it's going to be a completely different film from the books.
Well, I think that's
that's a very good thing.
Sorry?
I thought that was Chris talking, and I was going to say, I didn't think he read it because he was a DC guy.
Well, I peek in on the Marvel events just to see if they've stopped trying to offend and disturb me about everything that made me originally fall in love with Marvel comics, and just writing their characters that wildly out of their established personality just to get an event comic that just it was bad and kept getting stupider as it went along. I think the online review I posted at the time was that Civil War eats ass, and then when it's done eating that ass, it realizes that it really should have had the ass appetizer and calls the waiter back to get an ass appetizer, and then when the ass dessert cart comes along, it makes sure to have double portions of ass dessert.
So you're no fan then?
No.
My favorite issue of it was the Spider-Man reveal. That was my favorite issue with him revealing his secret identity, and obviously that was retconned 2 seconds later. And obviously that is not going to be as impactful if they put that in the films as well. So, you know, everything that made Civil War Civil War is not going to be in the movies.
Well, except the Registration Act. But they're going to take the best idea, and they're going to run with that.
Yeah, but funny enough.
I was going to say,
funny enough, again, you're going back to the Mutant Registration Act from the 1984 X-Men stuff. So, I mean, even that wasn't unique as well. So.
Well, okay, but it's the Registration Act and Cap versus Iron Man. The stuff that you guys are talking about, I almost wonder if we read the same Civil War, because Cap versus Iron Man is what brings you to the party. It's not Clor, for crying out loud.
Really? Yeah, but it was a fundamental thing, because it was all that stuff was going on in the background, and him killing Black Goliath was like the major thing of why Cap turned on Iron Man in the first place.
And the registration thing
was the people, the Speedball's team, and that explosion. So.
Are you out of your mind? The comic is about Iron Man and Cap fighting over the soul of Spider-Man. That is actually what it's about. It's not about the death of Black Goliath. For crying out loud.
I missed that. You must be seeing deeper than I'm seeing. But
unlike Hawkeye, I don't even think anyone cared about Black Goliath when they killed him.
Poor Black Goliath. I didn't know who he was before that scene, but.
Hey, Black Goliath, nobody's seen you in 40 years. What could possibly happen next?
Well, it's whenever you kill you, that's what's going to happen.
Whenever you see a character in a big event book that hasn't been around for like a decade, you're like, okay, I know where this is going. You know, it's like when Quicksilver shows up in the Avengers movie. Okay, you're a legally questionable background character. It's Joss Whedon, so somebody has to die in the big fight at the end. I'm pretty sure what's happening here. So.
You know, one of the funniest things that happened to me when I was working on the character books for DC Adventures was I would write my version of the character's background based on what I remembered, and then when I was done, I would do like a little online fact check just to make sure I didn't miss anything. And one of the groups I had to do was had to do the Young All-Stars, because, you know, they're not all winners, kid. And there was Neptune Perkins, who I think only I even vaguely remember. I was double checking him, and they said he was killed in Infinite Crisis. And I was just sitting there like, wait, I read Infinite Crisis. I have no memory of him being in there. And I lost an entire night's work going through Infinite Crisis panel by panel, trying to find the place where he gets killed, just to confirm this wasn't just internet trolling. So, yeah, it's amazing how far they will dig just to bring people back to murder them.
Yes. Well, apparently, in Avengers Disassembled, Brian Michael Bendis was given a list by Marvel of people he could kill and people he couldn't kill. They drew up a list, and they were like, all right, this list, they're all up for grabs. You can ice them. And so, of course, like, you look at the ones he killed, so you know that, like, okay, Scott Lang, Ant-Man, Jack of Hearts, because really, who gives a crap about Jack of Hearts?
I'm pretty sure Triathlon and Jack of Hearts were towards the top of that list.
Right. They probably had little, like, stars and arrows pointing to them. It's like, we're not trying to influence you, but we just put these names in bold and italics.
I've always admired the openness of Marv Wolfman whenever he's asked about Crisis on Infinite Earths and all the people that died there, and he admits the only reason the Bug-Eyed Bandit died was just he saw that was a list of characters DC had and just said, he's got to go.
Right.
You know, nothing else about him, but he's dead just for that name.
Right, right. Well, what was it, the other kind of hilarious event thing, when Bendis was doing Secret Invasion, he would write for his artist, and I think Cho drew Secret Invasion, but whoever it was, he would write. In this big splash page, all the heroes of the Marvel Universe are going to be in the background, and then he would look at the page and he would be like, Frank, why is Howard the Duck in my goddamn comic book? And Frank would be like, you said all the Marvel heroes. So.
When are we going to get Star Fox in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
that will be the day the internet cracks open. Like, you know, when people find it, what do you mean his superpower is roofying people?
That would be problematic. Well, hey, guys, you can keep going if you want. I've got to go pick up my kid from daycare, so I'm going to go ahead and jump off at this point. Thank you, Chris. Can I share with you just one tender thing you learn as a father that maybe you guys don't have kids don't know about yet?
Please do.
Did you know a 2-year-old has enough body strength to punch you in the testicles and actually reverse one of them?
Oh, my God.
They can do this. Say you're getting changed. Now here's the good thing. Your testicle will flip back on its own after a couple days.
So what happened when you punched him back, Mike?
The wonderful thing about fatherhood is you're prevented by all the loving hormones you have for your kid from you just kind of slunk away in pain, like something that slinks away in pain. So anyway, I encourage you all to have children as soon as you can. And with that, I will talk to you guys later.
Oh, bye, hey, and
any listeners, sorry about the horrible testicle reversion anecdote. Don't forget to leave funny comments on the podcast. Whoever leaves the one that amuses me and Walt the most gets a copy of Emerald City. So, talk to you guys later. Thanks, everyone, for coming out.
Bye, Mike.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye. Good night.
So before we call this an Age of Ultron, did you guys want to talk about anything else?
We could talk about the incredibly impressive Joker from the – they released the photo for Suicide Squad.
Oh, for Jared Leto?
Oh, the Home Alone Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Home Alone Joker, yeah.
That's good. So what did you think about it, Abe, seeing as did you see the image that they did where they took all of his tattoos and they made them like for different different characters, like video game advertisements and sports drink advertisements and stuff?
Yeah, I'm bewildered. I really cannot see that as the Joker. I'm sorry. It looks like a reject from the Oz TV series rather than Batman. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I know, because obviously we had the podcast not long ago where we were talking about, where Mike was talking about the Joker going more extreme and more violent, and that pretty much just sums up that image there. It's like, can we get more gangster with the Joker? Yes, we can! We can put tattoos on him as well. Mm.
Do you think that that's an attempt to connect with a younger audience that might find that more appealing than just, you know, a guy in a purple suit?
I don't know. I suppose so. I don't know. I just find it odd that they don't seem to get it. They just don't seem to think. I mean, people were saying about the Joker in the second Dark Knight movie being more kind of like the comic book version, which he kind of is. But to be honest, I don't like the Nolan films anyway, so it makes no difference to me. I've only ever seen that film once, and that was enough for me. So, it just worries me. I just think, say again, we're talking about the dark grittiness of the DC cinematic universe, and that's another iteration of it. It's another, let's make these guys as grey and nasty as possible without, you know, any kind of, the fun part of superhero stuff is supposed to be, like, costumes and characters and bad guys that are bad because they've got powers, rather than just going, everyone's kind of got guns and stuff, and it's all street level, and even though they're not supposed to be.
It's a DC universe where you don't even like the nominal heroes, and it doesn't really make you want to drop $50 to see what the villains might be up to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you can't like Superman, then do you really want to know what Harley Quinn and Deadshot and Amanda Waller are getting into? Jesus.
I mean, the Harley Quinn thing, I mean, is obviously derived from the Arkham City computer games, and that's more of a version from that, and that kind of snuck into the New 52 as well, so that I can kind of see where that's coming from. But the Arkham City computer games have still managed to put, like, Solomon Grundy, a really cool 10-foot tall killer croc in it, so they've kind of gone for swayed towards reality slightly more than the comic books have, but still kind of it's maintained some of that kind of freaky kind of cool characters, whereas the cinematic stuff is that stick a guy in a grey suit, that's another villain, yay, off you trot. It's just madness.
Well, the other thing that they're doing too, which to me, it means that they, if they have to be doomed. Like, I've been reading stories about this train wreck of their solo Wonder Woman movie, and they're on their fifth writer, and executives and the director are just pulling pieces from all five scripts and cobbling them together into this cinematic Frankenstein. That's what they're doing.
It's like
that's because apparently that was supposed to be a World War II setting as well, wasn't it? The first Wonder Woman movie.
I think
that was the original.
That was Joss Whedon's idea when he left.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon was originally going to write and direct a Wonder Woman movie. Can you imagine how much better that would have been?
Well, Warner Brothers showed him, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, and
of course they did. Yeah, that's right. They nerfed him off him.
Right. And think about the main sticking point when he said, okay, irreconcilable differences, I'm walking away. I'm not the man you want for this job. He wanted, tell me if this sounds familiar, he wanted the first Wonder Woman movie to be in World War II, and then the last shot of the movie being her encountering the modern world, and then the second Wonder Woman movie being in the modern world. Kind of sounds like what they did with Cap. Weird.
Yeah.
And that worked out so terribly for Marvel.
And obviously.
Hey guys, Walt from the Vamp Podcast here. We had a little trouble with the recording of today's episode, and some of Ultron's nefarious plans got through to shut us down. We lost 1 minute and 38 seconds of the final parts of the show, so if it just cuts out, that's exactly what happened. We blame Ultron, and so should you. Thanks for tuning in to the Vamp Podcast.